Welcome to episode 16 of our first ever adventure through the Star Wars universe. My name is Mary Clay. If that's too complicated for you, just call me MC. And I know nothing about Star Wars, but that's slowly been changing. Today, we continue our watch through of the prequels with Attack of the Clones. Joining me are friends of the Force, Brad and Sarah. Welcome!
Welcome, thank you
Hello.
For having us. We're excited to be here.
So exciting.
I'm excited to have y'all on. Your podcast is very appropriately named, being Friends of the Force, because already you guys are very friendly. I'm very excited to have y'all on.
Thank you.
Thanks. We're glad to be making a new friend today.
Yay.
Especially talking about a favorite movie of ours from our childhoods. So this is a good one.
Yeah, tell me about y'all's relationship with Star Wars. You know, obviously, this is my first time experiencing it. So do you guys have particular memories of watching Attack of the Clones for the first time?
Not for the first time for me, but Attack of the Clones was like my most quintessential road trip movie as a kid. It was the DVD that we would always bring in the car. There's something about it. There's something about it that makes it great for like a summer camping trip. Road trip situation. And I had thought I had lost the DVD for a number of years, and then I found it a few years ago and I felt like I was on top of the world. But I was introduced to Star Wars by my dad pretty young. He sat us down, me and my younger brother, and said like, oh, if it gets too scary for you, like, we'll turn it off. And that was episode 4. And my younger brother was terrified of Darth Vader and was like, turn it off. And I was like, no, this is amazing. And then he had his Star Wars phase as a kid, and I'm having my Star Wars phase now as an adult.
That's awesome. I also had a car DVD, and for whatever reason, mine was definitely Shrek.
Ooh,
as well as
good one.
Randomly Shark Tale, I think that's what it's called.
The animated one, Shark Tales?
Yeah. Shark Tale. Is that the one with like the fish?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it
like,
is.
I just remember for whatever reason having that on DVD along with Shrek on all of like our like road trips for like the portable DVD player thing.
Wow.
I love that for you. Those are some excellent, those are some very fun choices.
Brad, how about you?
Well,
I mean, you can also answer the car DVD question if you would like.
Yeah.
But,
well, I was going to say,
do you have a car DVD, Brad? I need to know.
We used to have a VHS like in our suburban growing up. So we had like one under the seat behind the driver, so you could like pop in a VHS. We used to watch, I think it was like Bruce Almighty or Ace Ventura. We used to watch that a lot on road trips. The VHS for that. Speaking of like physical media, Attack of the Clones, I'm pretty sure is one of the last things I ever bought on VHS. And I know it was the last Star Wars movie on VHS as well.
Yeah, I just read that. I was looking over some trivia and whatnot before we sat down, and this was like the last one made on VHS,
yeah.
Which is so weird to be in that time to be like reading about it. And I remember living in that time period of being like, what are like DVDs? Like this is the height of technology.
Yeah. And I think it did come out on DVD as well. So like, it was a weird time. It was a very weird time. But for me, Attack of the Clones, I remember very fondly seeing in the theaters. I think episode 1, I remember the crawl. And that was it. And then episode 2, I remember Obi-Wan jumping out the window. I remember the opening scene with the big explosion. And then I remember Flippy Yoda and just loving that as a small kid.
Flippy,
being like, this
Flippy
is great.
Yoda.
This is awesome. I love the Battle of Geonosis. It's great. Appropriately, I know we're talking about the early parts of the movie today with Obi-Wan jumping out said window. But yeah, I just remember seeing the movie and loving it. And I grew up on the original trilogy. My brother gave me the box set as a kid, and I watched them every single day. As like a toddler, reenacted all the scenes at home, and then the prequels came out, and I love them near and dear because, you know, I still love the original trilogy, but the prequels had all the flashy special effects for me as a kid and had Anakin Skywalker and Padme Amidala, who I definitely had a crush on as a kid, most importantly. I mean, like, who wouldn't have a crush on Natalie Portman when you're a kid, though, right? I mean, like, come on.
I love Natalie Portman.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I've discussed a lot about how the prequels definitely have drawn younger audiences in a way that the original trilogy like wasn't quite built to do. And like that's because the prequels are so like flashy, and like I feel like there's so much more use of lightsabers and explosions and, you know, special effects and like all this stuff that like has definitely like drawn
kids in a lot more. Mm-hmm. So Attack of the Clones came out. It's so crazy that like we're now entering like the 2000s. And I'm like, wait a minute, this was like in my childhood and this isn't in the 70s anymore. This doesn't seem as like far away as the original or even Phantom Menace, because I was like, oh, that was the 90s. But like, this is the 2000s now. Came out, yeah, in 2001. The Metacritic score has a Metascore of 54 and a user score of 6.1. And then over on Rotten Tomatoes, good old Rotten Tomatoes, a critic score of 65% on the Tomometer. And then a audience score of 56%. So
boo.
I don't know.
Everybody's wrong. I'm right.
The age old
debate.
Definitely
not like beloved reception, I would say. Not super positive.
But I will say what's really cool now, I think, is like they are definitely having a resurgence, all of the prequels, because now we're getting, you know, the 20th and 25th anniversaries of these movies. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun to like go to a Star Wars celebration and get to be in a room with a bunch of people who grew up with the movie just like you did. And then also like have a positive nostalgic feeling about it and just like a generally positive feeling about it. All being really excited about it. So those people are out there. Yeah. I think it's really fun times to like actually meet up with other people who also grew up with the movies.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to go to, as this episode comes out, I think we'll be entering kind of like this official period of we're approaching May the 4th. There's also a lot of theatrical releases right now and theatrical showings of Phantom Menace because it's the 25th anniversary. Is that how math works? Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to any showings of that coming up in the next couple weeks?
Oh yeah, I will be going
probably.
And Sarah, you gotta go because they're showing the special Acolyte preview at the Phantom Menace.
Oh, you're
so,
right.
Like, you
I'll
have
be
to go.
There.
You have to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I'll be there. Don't worry about it. I will be. My butt will be in a seat. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of time, how time works, what's crazy to me is we've had more time between Attack of the Clones and now than between Return of the Jedi and Attack of the Clones. That to me is a little weird to think about. I'm pretty sure that's how math
works. Oh, like
works.
The
wait between, it's like the wait that was like 19 years and now we've had 22 years since Attack of the Clones. I know, Sarah, that's math. I know we don't usually math on the show, but we mathed here.
That's crazy.
But to Sarah's point, I think the prequels at the time got ripped into. I remember it was very unpopular to like the prequels. And I think especially for, you know, the folks that I'll call the original trilogy fans, like the people who grew up and were there on you know, opening night and opening day and opening week and month and year. I think that they had very specific expectations of what they wanted the prequel trilogy to be and to capture like a very specific magic that only really the original trilogy could capture with just the times like Hollywood in the 70s. Like it's hard to recapture that in some ways, but I feel like over time, the kids who grew up on the prequels and loved the prequels and for us really introducing us to new aspects of Star Wars and like getting us even deeper into it. I think now it is like Sarah said, having that resurgence because we're 20 some years past, actors are coming back into Star Wars like Hayden and like Ewan, hopefully Natalie at some point in a flashback sequence. Still waiting, but that's pretty cool, you know, because I think it's a little bit of vindication that like, hey, even if the prequels weren't necessarily like critically acclaimed, what matters the most about Star Wars is like how you personally feel about it. And if you love a movie, like no matter the reasons, that's all that matters, you know, like I have disagreements about certain movies, but I know it's some other people's favorite movie, so I'm not going to trash it. But that's the cool thing about Star Wars is we can just all kind of talk about why we like certain things, why we don't like certain things, as long as that's coming from a place of good, even like the dislike. Because, you know, nowadays that's a little tougher to have those conversations with certain groups. You know?
Yeah, totally. Not just here to trash everything. So that being said, let me trash this movie. No, I'm totally kidding. I do recognize, I feel like I need to give the disclaimer that like, I'm not here to harsh anyone's vibes. We're all here to have a fun time. I understand that Star Wars is very important and meaningful and fun to a lot of people. I am definitely not one of those people, I think. And I'm learning
and
that
our new friendship is over.
Yeah. And in the call, thank you guys for coming on.
Right.
I was definitely kind of like having a harder time with Phantom Menace. It was fine. It was perfectly average. This movie made a lot of, I'll put it this way. I enjoyed a lot of it. I absolutely hated to my core everything to do with Anakin.
He's
and that might be a harsh statement. It's not even that it's cringe. It's that he's an incel, basically. It's not even that, like, he just is so toxic. There are just so many red flags, all over the place. Just red flags. And there's just so much. Yes, listeners, I will probably go on many feminist rants as I discuss this movie and maybe even the next one.
You will.
Oh, get ready.
Oh, my God. But I just...
a pained laugh.
I just don't like how they wrote this. And like, it's like, what was I expecting? He turns into Darth Vader. But like, it was just really jarring to go from like, oh, it's a little boy, you know, who's 10 years old and he's excited to be a Jedi and he's excited to like be a good guy. And he does Formula One racing on, you know, his small home planet. And then like in the very first scene that we see Anakin in this movie, he's like so negative and combative, and like it's just such a start. Anyway, we'll get into that, but like those are kind of like my general thoughts. And I think something else that is really missing from the original trilogy that I really enjoyed and connected with the most is just like the wackiness and the zaniness. There are no moments of like Han tapping the stormtrooper on the shoulder and then running in the opposite direction. There's none of that really like wackiness going on. There is some of it in this like chase scene at the very beginning, but like that's kind of the extent of it. So it at this point to me, it feels like it kind of like forgot its roots a little bit of like, hey, this is a silly universe. Like, let's maybe like lighten it up a bit instead of having this really intense, depressing, dark character who's like resentful.
I'll be interested to hear what you if your thoughts change at all when you see Revenge of the Sith. And I think it's hard, like, I definitely see where you're coming from, and it's hard to take that step back knowing all the things that we know about like this time period.
Sure,
and like kind
yeah.
of why it is so dark, because you know the Clone Wars begin at the end of this movie, right? And it's not a very good time for anybody, not the Jedi, not the Republic, not any planets or civilians in the galaxy. So it's, you know, stuff's getting bad. That's interesting. I think what I do love about this movie is like it, while it doesn't necessarily have that sort of charm, like, I don't want to say it doesn't have the charm of the original trilogy. I think they are definitely different movies. Like this to me feels more like a noir in a way, you know, like Obi-Wan kind of on his like investigation chase and like a little bit of romance, despite the romance not being really written the best in many aspects, and Anakin kind of being a little bit of a creep in some parts.
I will say it does feel kind of like of its time of the early 2000s, yeah, where people were writing, you know, quote unquote romance like this and being like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah.
This is healthy. This is completely acceptable for us to be showing our children and to be like, yeah, this is what love looks like.
You can go tell anybody that you like that you really hate sand. That's how you win over somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. The early 2000s in general were very interesting. I think this movie too, like the romance was a huge part of it. Like the marketing for it, the Empire magazine cover with Anakin and Padme, just, you know, take the movie out of it. They don't do that anymore in Star Wars. Like
Sarah is a product. Engulfed, by the way, listeners, in a throw of the poster.
No.
with like them like lovingly embracing each other, you know, like,
okay, one of the best movie posters of all time.
That poster is gorgeous. But there's another poster. Have you seen the teaser poster where they're looking away from each other and it's like, a Jedi shall not know fear nor hate, and it's like a little bit more space and it says nor love. Oh, I live for it. It's the most gorgeous like teaser poster around. It's just beautiful.
Interesting. Yeah.
And like, I could have, Brad, this is a fun little tidbit, I could have bought one on eBay Blu-ray, like an official one, for like $4 back in like 2013. And then I didn't. And then like Star Wars had its resurgence. And now I'm not buying it for $4 anymore. Anyway, that's just a little thing that I have held on to that hurts.
I think another part of this resurgence, and I don't mean this as like a, I don't know how to take this to mean what you will. I think it's also kind of similar in the way that a lot of people have really embraced that, like Twilight is having a resurgence, where a lot of people are watching the Twilight movies now, or they're rewatching them, or they're like super popular now. And it's kind of like we're looking back on these movies that weren't that great, but there's so much distance now that people are coming back to them very lovingly and being like, these are fun. These mm-hmm. are like, we can build like a community around this. We can make our own, like, we'll have like showings of this and, you know, kind of like bordering on like, you know, cult classic followings. I don't know if Twilight will become a cult classic.
In its own way, I think it already is.
yeah.
But I think that's really fair in the sense that like the distance helped, but also I think with the internet, it's allowed people, like the social internet, you know, which may or may not be dying at this point, but like the social internet has allowed people to like find their very specific niche spaces over and over again. And I think for movies perhaps like Twilight or like, you know, the prequels that were in the zeitgeist, like generally panned regardless of popularity, like it wasn't cool to like these things necessarily. Like I remember being a Twilight hater. Like I read Twilight so I could say that I read Twilight and I hated it, which was like very cool and edgy of me. I've grown now. I'm not like a Twilight fan, but I've grown now, guys. But like I think it's coming back to these things that we enjoyed but maybe felt shame about, and enjoying them again without shame.
100%. Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head there.
That plays a role with it.
Yeah. I mean, how do you go to Celebration and go to a Phantom Menace 20th anniversary panel and Attack of the Clones 20th anniversary panel, and it's a packed room and everybody is cheering, right? And you feel that community live in person of like, oh, those kids in middle school who tell me, screw off, you like Star Wars, the prequels suck, screw you, you know, like those kids, we're just like a minority in some respect, you know. It's like, I think that community that you develop, yeah, I think being able to connect with people whose favorite movie is also Revenge of the Sith, that was like that moment of, oh crap, I wasn't alone this whole time. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, I think both of you have put that wonderfully. Right off the bat, the Disney Plus description of this movie says, young Anakin and Padme fall in love as galactic war looms. I did not know that Anakin and Padme were going to be love interests.
Young Anakin... What? Excuse me? Spoilers? He's a child. What?
So that immediately spoiled the movie for me.
So that was nice of Disney Plus to do that for me.
I was like, great description. To be fair, like I have been basically like trying to put blinders on. And like if I were to look at the movie poster for more than like 5 seconds, I think I could infer that they're supposed to be love interests. So, and like, you know, within the first 10 minutes, we definitely see that. So it's not like this was a huge plot twist, but it was definitely something that because if you recall, the last time I saw Anakin, he was a child.
Yep.
So I was very confused about why. I was like, what the heck? No. I was like, they are children. Why are they love interests?
It's like this. Did you watch Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yes, of
course. It's the Katang situation. It's like Zuko was right there and he's older. And,
I don't know because Aang and Katara are only 2 years apart.
But like he's baby when like that show first starts. He's like baby. And I'm like, yes. Okay, she's older than him and you're she's fair. Going after fair. Baby. No. it's the same vibe here for me at least. Like
oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's maybe one of the things that if you kind of look at the prequel trilogy as a whole and think, okay, well, you know, I see this for what it is. I acknowledge it for what it is. I like these elements. I don't like these elements. I think one of the things that really would have shifted people's perceptions of it if the childhood aspect was just maybe a part of that first movie, and then we transition into the teenage or young adult Anakin, and then we follow his journey from there. Because yeah, it gives the first scene a very odd sort of feeling.
It's a big time jump. It's very. So let's kick off the movie. We have, of course, as always, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. The listeners can probably put together every time I do that, and then I just increasingly lose enthusiasm.
But you're avoiding that DMCA. You're not going to get demonetized now, so you're good.
And the slow crawl, it's better than the slow crawl, the content of the slow crawl from Phantom Menace, which was like the Tax Federation.
You're not a fan of taxes? Like,
but this one is like there are debates going on in the Senate, and I'm like, oh my god. I was like, please no, not like endless, you know, like literal politics in this.
It's
war
so
movie.
Good though. It's so good.
Politics.
Oh my god, when you get into more material, like, you're gonna be like, oh yeah, the politics. I hope you'll come around. I promise it's gonna happen.
I hate to spoil you guys, I have never been a politics girly.
Okay,
I just
okay.
Am
okay,
not,
maybe not.
I just I am
have,
not
I
do
have
not
a
care.
Political science degree.
The absolute hardest part of Lord of the Rings for me to understand was the Council of Elrond. And so we learn from the slow crawl that, you know, since the Phantom Menace, there has been a massive divide going on in the galaxy. And I believe it says several thousand solar systems, yep. Or maybe even just like thousands, are wanting showing their desire to break off from the Republic and, I guess, become their own like independent solar systems. And meanwhile, there is a formidable foe called Count Dooku, who we don't see for like the first half of the movie.
Really? Yeah, I know. It's a little silly.
He is like out there leading this movement. And so the Senate and Chancellor Palpatine are trying to like keep the Republic together. And so where this picks up is Senator Amidala. And I was like,
Senator Amidala, the former Queen of Naboo. What? How did that happen? How did she? I feel like queen to senator is a demotion. So what happened there?
We do get that answer later on. But anyway, Padme is going to Coruscant to vote on matters relating to this like separatist movement. And so they land, and she and the chief like hop out of this starfighter, this whatever mini spaceship. And the captain is like, oh, that went a lot better than I thought. And then, like, the main ship immediately blows up. Yep. So it's like, come on, dude.
Come on, man. Like, you couldn't wait till at least we got to the bunker.
See, that's a little whimsy. It's a little jokey. Yes, jokey.
Yeah. Oh, there's lots of great jokes in here, but definitely just not with, like, the same, like, creepiness silliness. Definitely not this, because then... the queen / senator is coming out. She still looks, this is what I'm like, do all the senators dress this elaborately from Naboo? Because like she's still, that's why it's kind of confusing at first, because it's like she's still dressing like she's the queen. She still has the budget for that, I guess. Or maybe like everything was specifically tailored to her, so she gets to take it when she leaves the throne.
Yes. I think because she is former queen, she retains that like
she retains
status.
The wardrobe. Yeah,
the
more,
wardrobe.
More importantly, she retains the same like security detail.
Yes,
because this is classic, you know, oldest trick and joke in the book. It's a decoy.
Who is that cutie? What? Oh, it was a fake one. Are they still doing that? Wait, was that Keira Knightley?
I had to ask our Discord server. I had to ask other people, was that Keira Knightley? Because I have an inability to tell them apart.
No,
Keira
I got
Knightley
it.
And Natalie Portman. So I had to be like, was that Keira Knightley? And they were like, no, that was just
you.
That
and then the
Moidians
fell for it. Both of you. Look at you clowns. You both fell for the oldest trick in the book. The Keira Knightley, Natalie Portman swap. Oldest trick.
And it'll get me every time. It'll get me every time. I kid you not. She is blown up, and then the other person that was with the captain takes her helmet off, and that is Senator Amidala. That is Padme. And unfortunately, our decoy, I think her name is Corday, she dies. And the captain is like, it's okay. She has done her duty, and now you need to go do yours. There is a council. It's like a Jedi. There's Jedi Council, but Chancellor Palpatine is also there. So it's kind of like a combination. And they're talking about like the state of things. And he's asking Yoda what he foresees happening with this war. And they're like, do you really think it'll come to war? And Yoda is so unhelpful and is like, the darkness clouds the future. I don't, you know, it's like that. What are you even here for?
honestly, Yoda is at fault for everything these days. I love Yoda. So much. Yoda, special heart. This is a place in my heart for Yoda. But like, he's wrong, like a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like every other Jedi is smarter than him.
Yeah, like if you asked Yoda, hey Yoda, I'm gonna flip a coin, heads or tails, he would say not heads or tails. He would be like arm. That's how wrong he is.
No, we love Yoda. We love Yoda. He just continues to. He's very old. Mm-hmm. He's very old. He's lived a very long time, and he makes decisions that he thinks are the right decisions based on his experience, but he's afraid of the outcomes of these things.
Yeah. It's giving that coworker that you can't, your boss can't be ageist and fire them, but they're also not adapting to the times. They're not keeping up with things. They're not like improving their workflow. And it's like, hey, just because you've been working in this industry for, you know, 40 years doesn't mean that you're the best at it.
How do I convert PDF into email?
Oh my god, get out of here with the Yoda impression,
but
please.
For real.
But for real though.
But like for real.
I guess I will say in Yoda's defense though, like think about all the mistakes you've made in like your, you know, 20 to 30 some years of your life. And like imagine having to make so many mistakes over like 800 years and then you can't even start keeping track of the mistakes anymore. So you just keep making the same mistakes because you can't remember 400 years ago. And you're like, oh, dang it. I should have remembered. I sent that one email 400 years ago. I forgot about. Should have not worded it that way again.
And I mean, and to be fair, to Yoda's credit, by the end of the movie, they do acknowledge that like they are not as strongly connected to the Force as they once were, and that like they are not as good at knowing what is to come, and things are way more uncertain for them. So Yoda, you know, not being able to see what is to come is very like telling of the story that they are telling and setting up in this movie for the Jedi.
And he does tell Palpatine too, like the dark side clouds all. So
yeah,
oof.
They're getting a little too entangled, perhaps.
Mm. Then Padme walks in and they're like, we're so glad you're alive. We're going to order someone to protect you. And Padme's like, I don't think it was that serious. And Palpatine is like, I think it's either here or maybe in a future conversation that they say they believe that Count Dooku is behind this attack. They're like, well, I don't know, because he used to be a Jedi and it wouldn't be in his nature to kill someone, which is just like, so I think, again, going back to this conversation of like the weakening points of the Jedi. And they're like, oh, well, he won't assassinate anyone. And I think that's so naive of the Jedi to say that. They're like, well, he used to be one of us several years ago, so I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure he's a nice guy still. You know, he might have some ideological differences. He may or may not have, you know, done a couple bad things here and there. But, you know, seems like a nice guy.
I don't know.
They're like, it'll be fine.
They feel like the Jedi's worldview, structure, dogma, whatever, is so strong and so prevalent because the Sith and the dark side don't exist right now. you know, and like the dark side is just creeping in. But because of that, they don't need they're like, well, he's not the bad guy, because the bad guy doesn't exist. We don't have bad guys in our
time. Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of, so at the end of Phantom Menace, they, you know, Darth Maul dies and they have a conversation where they're like, who did we kill? The master or the apprentice? And then seemingly they spent these past 10 years being like, oh, well, I guess we solved that problem.
Honestly, you're not wrong. That's actually probably totally right.
Like, that's so weird.
Did we kill the master of the apprentice? Oh, well, does it matter?
I don't know.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there. Sort of vibes.
Yes. Meanwhile, this, you know, Chancellor Palpatine guy is looking pretty suspicious. Anyway, oh, that's right. So they say, well, maybe you'll feel more comfortable if we order some Jedi to watch over you, someone you're already familiar with. And so we cut to Obi-Wan and Anakin, who is now all grown up. He still has the little ponytail and rat tail.
Yeah, it's a buzz thing. Cut. Yeah.
Obi-Wan looking hot. I think
the mullet, in
the long hair, the beard. This whole time, Padme's. Like, I mean, like if we're going with Aang, Katara, Zuko, Padme, Obi-Wan's right there.
And
girl.
He's a pretty young guy. You know, him and Anakin don't have that large of a age difference between them.
Yeah, I read that. Ewan McGregor. He knew he was supposed to be much older than Anakin in this movie, so he grew out a beard. And I'm like, it doesn't make you look that much older than him.
But it's also, their age difference is not that dramatic compared to the typical master and apprentice relationship. Because they're just, you know, within maybe 10 years, a handful of years within each other, whereas like Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan had a much larger difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes them have a different dynamic, but you're right. That's also, I think, a criticism. So like, well, why didn't she just go for Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan's everything. Obi-Wan, we love Obi-Wan in this house. He's handsome, he's nice. Like,
and you hear what he says to Anakin in a little bit. He's like, you know, politicians, they're just not to be trusted. They, you know.
Yeah, oh my god. That's my favorite commentary, I think. so he's like adjusting his robes and, you know, he's sweating, and Obi-Wan's like, wow, I haven't felt this, you know, anxious energy off of you since we fell in that snake pit together or whatever. And this is Anakin's like first line in this movie. And the subtitles literally say scoffs. So his very first thing that he does in this movie is scoff.
And I think that's bad.
That's so like encapsulating of what his characterization in this movie. And he's like, that was you, and I rescued you. And then Obi-Wan kind of like chuckles at him. And then he's like, geez, you're sweating. Calm down. It'll be fine. And I just, anyway, more on Anakin later. He's very nervous to see Padme. So they, first, they're welcomed by Jar Jar Binks.
Yay.
The one and only.
Junior senator.
Dressed up to the nines now. He's on his way up the ladder. Actually, I will say Jar Jar is the only senator I would trust. I know his heart is in the right place. He might step on poop every now and then, you know, but who doesn't?
Interesting.
Who doesn't? You know, we've all owned a pet.
Who among us hasn't?
Who among us hasn't stepped in some poop? Come on.
And he greets them. He's like, oh, I guess he doesn't recognize Anakin because he doesn't say anything. But I thought for sure he'd be like, Annie, because Jar Jar was the most, you know, I would say connected with Anakin versus Obi-Wan. But he's very excited to see them. And so he leads them into the room. And Padme is like, oh, my gosh, welcome. It's been great. And she hugs Obi-Wan and then looks over his shoulder and goes, Annie, my, you've grown up. And then, oh, God. He really does have like two modes in this movie. And it's like disturbing or cringe.
I mean, yes. Yeah.
And this is the cringe part. And he's like, oh, you haven't changed today, except that you look more beautiful for a politician. I mean, or for a senator. I mean...
It's Isn't that romance at its finest? I mean, he's a lot in this movie. I will not deny. But you have to know that he just becomes more in Revenge of the Sith. He just becomes more.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt. And she immediately, like, not on purpose, but I feel like Anakin should have taken this as a step back, a sign to maybe calm down a bit. Mm. She goes, you're just like that little boy I met on Tatooine.
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
yeah, let's remember our place
she
here,
was
Anakin.
Stiff arming him into the friend zone. You'll always be that little boy. Oh. Like, you know your place. I'm the senator.
And yet the end of this movie. no, it's
so
she's right, and
this like attitude whatever continue. So I think they're like escorted away maybe for a second, and Anakin is like, she didn't even remember me, and I'm like, she recognized you within like 5 seconds of you being in the room.
What a little brat. Okay, I feel like I'm being a little critical, being a little negative. Let's have fun.
Like, maybe let's calm down. And Obi-Wan tells him this and is like, calm down. She's definitely she's happy to see us. Like, let's take a step back.
MC, what type of texture do you think Anakin Skywalker would be?
I think he is like one of those super needy, like an over-texter.
Like a quadruple
super
texter.
Super clingy, needy, who, and like, I've seen all these like horror stories of like people on TikTok who will like share screenshots of like people from like Bumble and Hinge. And it's like, they send an initial like, hey, what's up? And then they send like 5 more. And then they're like, wow, okay, I guess you didn't want to talk to me. And it's like, you sent those at like midnight.
Yeah.
And I was asleep. So no, but also the fact that you immediately wanted a response within, you know, an hour of you texting me tells me all that I need to know. So this was great. Goodbye. Block. You know, I think that's how he would text.
Mm. That's a fair answer.
It,
yeah.
Honestly. It's the emotional regulation he's lacking. It's it comes from two places for him. It comes from the fact that everybody's already decided that he's too old to be a Jedi, you know, like in the Phantom Menace. They're like, well, should we take him? He's already too old. Like, we haven't had the ability to completely brainwash him to the Jedi ways. But also secondly, the Jedi don't talk to girls or boys. You're not allowed to have attachments. You're not allowed. If you have a little crush, you better keep it to yourself, because mm-hmm. we're not allowed to date here in the Jedi. If you have a naughty feeling, a naughty thought, no, you didn't. You should meditate on that. Mm-hmm. That was bad.
Just
of
like
you.
The Catholic Church. Yeah.
Honestly, same vibes.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
sure.
And to your point, though, I think it's also just a flaw of the Jedi way of thinking, where they're like, fear leads to anger and anger leads to fall and like all this stuff. And it's like, so are you not allowed to have any kind of negative emotion? And their idea of that is just like, push it down, ignore it. You're not supposed to have these feelings. And I mean, if there's anything we learned from Frozen, it's that when you push those feelings down, they come out eventually and lead the entire kingdom to becoming frozen into an eternal winter. Is Anakin Elsa?
And then maybe you sing a banger song.
Oh man, I hope you read the High Republic one day. That's all I will say. Also, the fact that Anakin was stolen away from his mom basically by a group of Jedi. So he lacks that maternal figure in his life who could maybe tell him, hey Anakin, by the way, when you see a girl, don't start like, you know, spying on her in her bedroom while
she's
sleeping.
I think there's a lot of people in this movie who lack maternal figures.
Ooh.
As there are so many times where I was like, Padme, where is your mom? Where is your mom in this? Why is she not telling you no?
You've probably figured this out by now, but Star Wars and moms
don't do well. Yeah.
We've made a tiny bit of progress here and there, you know, these days, but Star Wars and moms, There's a sticky situation there. It's not happening. They're always dead.
They are always dead.
Yeah.
Maybe the Star War would stop happening if we stop worrying about father, son. Hello? Where's the mom in the room?
That's why these wars are happening.
Fact.
It's because all the moms are dying.
Literally.
No, really.
Exactly. Really. She called star moms and make a whole show about star moms.
They just need a mom to give them a good talking to.
Yeah, honestly. I agree.
So they have this scene where they sit down and talk with Padme about what they're going to do and how they've been, you know, ordered to watch her. And Anakin is like, we'll get to the bottom of this. We'll find out who's attacking you. And Obi-Wan's like, hey, now, that's actually not what we're here to do. And Anakin is like, I mean, why else would they? He's like, think about it. Why else would they get us to babysit her and guard her if it wasn't to find find this killer? Obi-Wan is just being like, I think he says something like, you'll do best to remember your place, young Padawan, is like something to the effect of what he says. And it's like, yes, Anakin, remember your place.
Yeah. Shut up. Flashback to me saying, let me be positive.
As he's literally watching Padme on a Nest cam. She's like,
oh my God.
Yeah, she turned the cameras off. Like, yeah, dude. Yeah. She wants to sleep in peace. R2's in there. He's got it under control.
Yeah. Yeah. So later that night, they're like up in her quarters watching her. And he says, she turned the cameras off. I don't think she liked me watching her.
Yeah.
I wouldn't either.
Right. Like while I'm sleeping. Oh my God. Thank you.
They're like, don't worry, I'll sense anything that's happening. Cut to the droid, like, cutting the glass in the window in her room.
Zany. Zaniness right there. It's great.
See,
it's good stuff. Good juxtaposition. They're bickering at each other, and there's worms, and they're like, oh, yeah, politics, politics, politics. It's like, shut up and listen to your senses.
I did forget to mention there was a scene like just before this where we see a bounty hunter talking to this other, I guess, assassin, who, by the way, is a woman. Woo! I feel like I have to celebrate anytime
Zam
a woman.
Wessel. She's so cool.
She was so
and
cool.
And then she dies.
Yeah, and then she died. It was
no, but she's
sad.
Really cool. And she has a cool costume.
Yes. Yeah. So cool. Real, yeah, just like really captivating part of this movie that she was involved in. So that's really cool. We love that for her. And she is given these, like, I think he calls them maybe snakes. And he says, like, be careful. They're very poisonous. So like, ew, gross. So she sends this like flying droid out to do this and sends these like snakes into the room that are like sneaking up to Padme's bed. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan and Anakin are talking about, they're talking about so many things. So first, Obi-Wan's like, you seem tired. And he says, yes, I haven't been sleeping much. And he's like, oh, you're still dreaming of your mother, huh? And then he's like, yeah, dreams are weird anyway. And I'm like, why wouldn't the Jedi? It just seems to me that the Jedi should be like, oh, tell me, like, let's go deeper into what those dreams are. What does that mean? Because they always say, like, trust your instincts, trust your feelings. And it's like, what more do you need of, like, your dreams literally telling you something? I think that is something huge that they're just like, oh, well, I'm sure it doesn't mean anything anyway.
Yeah, it's like the idea of, like, well, you should be able to keep yourself under control, your thoughts under control. But it's also, this is kind of, like, explored in some ancillary content, but, like, the Jedi and visions, they've got some beef with people who have visions, some distrust with the idea of visions. It's like a weird thing. And I think it's kind of written because of the way that this is handled, as opposed to kind of, it's like, well, everything that you write past this point can explain this sort of a thing. But yeah, visions are a funky thing for them.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And then Anakin says one of the worst lines. Actually, I think this is worse than the sand line. He says, like, I wish I was dreaming of Padme. Anytime I'm around her, it's so intoxicating.
It is a bit weird, too, coming right off of I was having a dream about my mom.
But my mother.
But I wish I was dreaming about Padme. It's like, that's the line of thinking.
These are the only two women he has ever met in his life.
And I'm like, I didn't need to hear how you're horny for Padme. I really didn't. And like, this is like not going to be the last time we hear Anakin talking about dreaming of Padme.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's terrible. I hate it.
It's his like his inner teen young adult boy, and it's also the space for his deepest anxieties all at the same time. It's a tough time to be Anakin. He's struggling out here. He's really got a crush on Padme, but he's also like, my mom, what's happening? I'm anxious.
My mom, my girlfriend.
Yeah, women in my life. I don't know what to do with them.
Which, like, I get what, because there's a scene in The Phantom Menace where Padme is like comforting him, like right after they leave Tatooine, and it's like, don't worry, like, we'll take care of you. And it's like, this is such a, like, just mommy issues.
Truly.
Anyway, and Obi-Wan is trying to shut that down because he is also deeply uncomfortable. And he's like, remember, Anakin, you can't have attachments. It's not healthy as a Jedi. And then he goes, besides, she's a politician. And I love that he's like, no, you're not allowed to love her because one, Jedi. Two, she's a senator. Ew. I love his distrust of that. And so they're like continuing in this conversation, you know, and then it cuts back to them as they're talking about Palpatine. Obi-Wan is like, I don't know, I don't trust Palpatine because he, you know, whatever. And Anakin's like, I don't know, I think he seems like a really trustworthy guy. He, and then, you know, the conversation breaks off and they rush in to save Padme. These like quote unquote snakes are these like giant like millipede things. Disgusting. Hate them with every ounce of my being. R2, what happened? He like kind of wakes up a little bit, but not enough to really alert or see what's going on.
He was taking a nap.
Yeah, that's
right. Got to sleep.
He went in sleep mode.
That's the question. Yeah. Did he fall asleep on the job, or like was he in power save mode where he's like, I'm off, but I'm on just enough to catch any worms that might come in the room. Although not really.
But he wasn't on to just to catch any worms in the room. That was Anakin, who then jumped on her bed, took out his lightsaber, and nearly sliced her into pieces.
I know. If I was thinking about that too, because like from her perspective, she's sleeping and then she wakes up and there's like a lightsaber going by her head. Like,
and a man on her bed. Ew, get out.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And then the other man dives out the window.
Yes.
I'm really surprised that this was, that they made Obi-Wan do this, because from what we see later on in the fight, this seems like way more of an Anakin move to just dive out the window and hold on to the droid. But that's what Obi-Wan does.
That's just an insane flight or flight like mechanism there of just jump out window. Like, what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't make the droid? What if he misses? What if he overcalculates? What's going to happen?
He's a Jedi, Brad.
Full send, no hesitation.
Yeah, like not even a conversation of like, see you later. He's just like, I'm out. He probably wanted to get out of the situation with Anakin. He's like, I've heard enough about your honestly, wet dreams. I'm out. I'm jumping out the window. It's my opportunity right here. I think that's it. It is uncharacteristic of Obi-Wan. That was the out. That was the out completely.
He was like, I would rather jump out this window than continue talking about Padme with you.
Truly. Keep me out of it.
This droid is returning to, I think her name is Zam.
Zam.
Is that it? Anakin, meanwhile, is following in a starfighter or a speeder of some kind. The droid gets like shot down, and then Obi-Wan just does like some free falling, and Anakin catches him. That I will say, this sequence I think is much more akin to what the original trilogy did a lot. Like, there's a lot of wit and banter. I think this is a much more likable version of Anakin that we see in this sequence where, because Obi-Wan's like, what took you so long? I kind of wish Anakin totally should have said, nice of you to drop in, you know? Like, I think that would have been great.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I love this sequence. I think that it's like, it moves really fast. It's, you're all over Coruscant, which is this city planet. And so there's so much hustle and bustle. And the music throughout this whole sequence is really fun too.
Yeah, it's so fun. The setting is it's a very unique setting that we haven't really been in before. It's a nighttime setting. It's the city. It's this like seedy, we're getting like seedy underbelly of this like futuristic city. It's really cool. And multiple times during this movie, I was like, oh, that sounds like the night bus from the Harry Potter movie. Or that sounds like, you know, the kids walking around Hogwarts discovering a mystery. And then, of course, I was reminded John Williams composed both.
Indeed.
If you listen to this music, it is almost note for note the same music that plays when Draco and Harry are chasing the Golden Snitch in Chamber of Secrets. It is literally the same track. It's like the same track. Yeah, it's wild. I would recommend listening to them side by side.
At this point in time, John Williams would have been composing both at the same time.
Yeah.
Because this is also when the Harry Potter movies, I believe Harry Potter, the Sorcerer's Stone came out in 2001 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So John Williams is really popping out. I mean, not that he wasn't before, but.
I gotta say, this is one of his best, because again, cringe romance aside, Across the Stars is like one of the best pieces of Star Wars music like ever created. It is so good. I don't know if you sat through the credits. I think that's the only part in the movie where it truly plays like out its fullest.
Yeah, I don't think I heard that. I'll have to yeah, go back
listen
and
to the full song like on Spotify or something. I will also say, if you enjoyed the banter with Obi-Wan and Anakin, if you ever get into the books down the road, Brotherhood by Mike Chen is really great. It captures a lot of that relationship that I think is in this scene. But I totally agree. I think like this is when they're at their best, like them two just being. Yeah. Master and apprentice and solving a situation to, you know, the best of their ability. They do get zapped by the power couplings, you know, that they drive through. But that's the fun of this scene. You know, it's kind of close to the asteroid field chase from Empire Strikes Back almost, where they're like, Han, don't hit the asteroids. Like, what are you doing? You know, like.
Yeah, this is it. And like, this is when you're reminded that Anakin was a pod racer.
Yeah.
And that he did pod racing. Cause he, and like in this moment, he's kind of like an adrenaline junkie and he's having fun and he's being like a little unhinged. He's being chaotic, but he's having fun.
I cannot wait for you to watch the opening sequence of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, jeez.
No, it's, you'll like it.
I know for sure he's got to be angsty, because I've seen a headshot of him and he has like some kind of a scar and I'm like, ooh, he looks dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of like fun banter in that kind of opening sequence of that as well.
Yeah. And like, I just wish this is definitely much more of the Anakin that I recognize from the first movie of like, mm-hmm. this is a kid. He's having fun. He is. And we also, this is, I think, a good sequence too of them showing us that Anakin is very in touch with the Force, because he makes all of these really risky moves that Obi-Wan is like, Anakin, stop, don't do that. You know, pull, you know, don't do that. Also, how many times have they been in this situation? Because many times Obi-Wan is like, you know, I hate it when you do that. And how many times have I told you not to do this? At one point, and they take a shortcut and it doesn't work. I don't know how you can take a shortcut when you're chasing someone and you don't know where they're going. But they stop and Obi-Wan's like, they went completely the other way. And as he's like chastising him, Anakin just jumps out.
It's so good.
And he goes, I hate it when he does that. How many times has he done that?
They're in this. It's been a couple of years since The Phantom Menace. They're in a routine at this point. Anakin does something stupid. Obi-Wan is like, oh my God, kids these days. Like every time.
It does a really good job, though, this movie, of like setting up that they have had a lot of those unspoken experiences of just like, what have they gotten themselves into before? You know, and it kind of makes your mind start running through the possibilities, like between the Nest of Gundarks and all these other crazy things they keep alluding to. I love it. It's the best part of their relationship.
They make her crash and they run into this bar. And I think one of them says she's a changeling, which I'm like, why wouldn't she change form at this point if she's running from them? But maybe I don't understand how changelings work. Maybe they only have like one other form or something. I don't know. But like, if I was a changeling, I would change form,
right?
to hide,
you know,
from the people I'm running from.
Not Zam Wessel's hottest day. She had a headache, didn't take an Advil before this. She wasn't thinking.
Yeah,
she wasn't thinking straight.
So they had they go into this bar and Obi-Wan gives him like a nice chastising too, and is like, don't forget your lightsaber and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yes, master. And they walk in and Obi-Wan goes, I swear one day you'll be the death of me.
They threw that line in there just to f*** with people.
For me, I just got a big groan. I was like, ah.
But you love it. But you gotta go.
I don't know.
I love that.
And Anakin goes, oh, don't say that. Like, don't say that. This is a really big instance of telling, not showing, because Anakin says, you're the closest, you're like a father to me, you're the closest to a father I've ever had. And This is very contrary to a lot of other things that we see Anakin do or say about Obi-Wan. So I don't think this, I mean, George has never really been praised for his writing, but I don't think this is great writing. We're definitely just like dropping in this piece of characterization rather than like actually writing that into his character and being like, oh, he clearly respects and reveres Obi-Wan and, you know, looks up to him and admires him. But like what we've seen so far is that like he is very cocky and sure of himself and at times think, you know, appears to think he knows better than Obi-Wan. So definitely just like, I don't know, for me, you know, really falling flat of his just one moment of many that like his characterization falls flat for me.
I think that's the issue of like the time jump, right? Like if they had kind of just set him up as a young adult,
yeah,
kind of in the first movie, I think we would have felt less of that. Like I understand why George did that and why kind of they chose that. But yeah, I definitely think that's one of those things that could have been fleshed out differently and people would have had a hugely different opinion.
Yeah. So they split up and Obi-Wan, I just have to bring this point in because I think this is also another, like, this was the early 2000s. A guy walks up to him and was like, hey, want a death stick? And Obi-Wan does a Jedi trick and goes, you do not want to sell me a death stick. You will go home and rethink your life. And this feels very much like just early 2000s, just say no, dare.
Dare.
Which for those that don't know, I think it was like drug and alcohol resistance education, which, by the way, was actually proven to have failed because all it did was actually introduce a lot of children to drugs and alcohol. And it just like very much, I was like, oh, death sticks are obviously like cigarettes of some kind. And it just was like, I don't know, funny early 2000s messaging for me.
The best part about that character too is his name is Elon Sleaze Bagano. Best Star Wars name ever.
Yes.
And a little bit too, could George Lucas have been seeing the future with a certain owner of Twitter?
Potentially. Maybe this is him in another galaxy far, far away.
You know, headcanon. A little too on the nose for me.
Actually, I don't think we have any right to criticize George because he predicted the future. That was beautiful. Great work.
So she sneaks up behind Obi-Wan and then just at the last second, he turns around. Classic Obi-Wan chops her arm off in a CD bar.
This is the one that always makes me confused with Zam, because again, I'm not a Zam hater. I'm a Zam lover. I'm a Zam stan. If Zam has no fans left, I am dead. But walking up to a Jedi, just like kind of holding your gun straight, just walking in a straight line.
That's like poor rethink that one planning. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's better than that.
She is.
Rough day.
That's what's disappointing.
It was a Monday.
So they take her outside and they're like, tell us, who hired you? And she goes like, it was a bounty hunter from. And then she gets hit in the neck with a poison dart, and she's killed. And we see her like fade back to like her original alien form. Rip Zam, we hardly knew ye.
So sad.
So the Jedi Council are discussing this and they decide that Obi-Wan is going to go after this and pursue this threat. And Anakin is going to escort Padme back to Naboo. And Anakin's like, I don't think you're going to get her to go back. She's very dedicated to this cause. And they're like, okay, we'll talk to Palpatine. So then Palpatine and Anakin have this scene that is just very much like, if you are watching in release order, you know the seeds that are being planted here. And like, you can see the writing on the wall that like, honestly, like Palpatine's low-key like grooming Anakin. And, yes, you know, like in Phantom Menace, he tells him like, oh, well, keep a close eye on your Jedi career, young Anakin. And then here he is saying like, oh, but you're the best Jedi there is. And you have the strongest connection to the Force that I've ever seen of any Jedi. And so he's definitely like, you know, flattering Anakin. And I wonder what that's going to lead to.
He's buttering him up.
It's interesting,
turkey.
Though, because, you know, how can you say no to the most powerful person in the galaxy?
Mm-hmm.
He has the rank of Chancellor.
Of course, I will bring up my running theory that you guys do not have to comment on. But by the end of this movie, it feels pretty sure that Lord Sidious is Palpatine. They feel very connected. The only flaw that I am foreseeing is I'm like, how is he going back and forth between these locations so quickly? So we'll return to that theory, but like so far.
Yeah, put a pin in it.
Yeah, so far I would say I have a lot of evidence to support this theory so far, this scene included. And like even that theory aside, we know what Palpatine becomes. So like we see this happening. Obi-Wan, meanwhile, is voicing his concerns about Anakin to Yoda and Windu, telling them that he's like, Anakin is young. He's very, like, his connection with the Force and his powers are making him arrogant. And Yoda is like, yeah, I've noticed this in a lot of Jedi lately. A lot of Jedi are becoming, like, really sure of themselves and cocky and arrogant. And then Windu goes, like, basically, he's like, fear not. Your Padawan is the chosen one and will bring balance to the Force. And then, like, that's the end of the conversation. They're just like, don't worry, he's the chosen one.
He gets a pass. It's fine.
It's probably fine.
He can go to Naboo with the senator because, you know, he's special. Whatever. Let them do their thing. What could happen? What could go wrong? What could go wrong? The guy was just watching her on her bed cam the day before yesterday. It's fine.
It'll be fine.
It's fine.
Super chill.
Yeah.
Speaking of more super chill fine things, Padme gives Jar Jar Binks her seat in the Senate while she is gone.
It's giving when your town's mayor is a dog.
Need I say it's concerning? If I was a citizen of Naboo, I would be horrified to learn that Jar Jar Binks was my Senate representative.
You're like, I did not vote for this.
And people were like, call your representative, voice your concerns. And I called up and Jar Jar Binks picks up the phone.
Nisa thinks that this is a bad idea.
So, however, that kind of solves this movie's quote unquote problem, or I guess I'll just say like the previous movie's problem of like Jar Jar Binks being a very widely disliked character and them trying to, you know, I guess not fully write him out. I can 100% see George Lucas not wanting to fully give in to, you know, the vitriol and being like, oh, they bullied this actor and this character so relentlessly. Yeah, sure, I'll listen to them and I'll write them out, because I feel like that's just rewarding such terrible behavior. But at the same time, it is kind of acknowledging and being like, okay, this wasn't a good move. Let's turn down the Jar Jar volume a little bit in this one. So Jar Jar has been like sequestered to the Senate for this movie. So he will not be accompanying us on these adventures.
It's interesting because they didn't necessarily like narratively have to bring him back. He just serves as like a more of a connecting point between the two movies, like a, oh, we know this guy and he's going to know the characters as they meet up again. But it's interesting to see that he's gotten as far with politics as just because, you know, like the Gungans and the human.
I guess
Nabooans.
They made him a general, I think, at the end or like right before the fight in Phantom Menace.
Right.
Or a commander of some kind.
Because he goes,
and so maybe
general, and then he faints. I remember that part.
So like maybe somehow he like worked his way up, but it is kind of like, yeah, we don't have to have Jar Jar narratively here in this movie, but I think it is just kind of probably for the kids, probably it's a friendly, fun face in this movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then commences another terrible scene with Anakin, where Padme is packing up and getting ready to leave. And Anakin is like, don't get me wrong, I'm very honored to be learning from Obi-Wan, and he's extremely wise and respected, and he's skilled with the lightsaber, but he's so unfair. He's so mean to me. He's so critical. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I just hate learning from him, is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Honest to God.
Yeah. He has a lot of angst.
Yes. Like so much angst.
Yeah.
So much angst that the Jedi are just like, bury it down. And it's like, no, that's not healthy.
No. Yeah, they don't know any better. Nobody knows any better. And they're all paying the price for angsty Anakin.
Once again, this is a franchise that would not exist if men went to therapy.
Fact.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
There are too many. Actually, you know what? I think if men went to therapy, I think like Lord of the Rings, if Sauron went to therapy, that's a different story. I don't know. Because like Aragorn and Frodo and Sam, they all go to therapy for sure. But I'm like, what? Anyway.
To be fair, if Boromir had gone to therapy, he might not have gotten Frodo to the right place and Aragorn wouldn't have seen him there. And you know what? So maybe in the Lord of the Rings universe, men shouldn't go to therapy. Maybe that's the exception.
But like, feel like the majority of Marvel movies maybe wouldn't exist if men went to therapy.
True.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy. I mean, the Star Wars original trilogy. Actually, it's honestly just Anakin who needs to go to therapy, because then that'll write off the original trilogy as well.
You're so real for saying that. Yeah, 100%.
What else? Avatar, if the Fire Lord went to therapy, or Zuko. Oh, Zuko.
Dude, if Zuko went to therapy.
If Zuko went to therapy, we would just jump straight to season 3.
Right. Like, the closest we get to that is his uncle opening a tea shop. Like, that becomes therapy.
Honestly, yeah.
Like that. So. Thank you, Uncle Iroh.
Anyway, he's like, you know, speaking so, it's really jarring the way that he's speaking. It's so like hateful, and like his tone is just like, it's really scary. Honestly, I would be afraid to be alone in a room with him. So he's like staring at Padme, and then she goes, "Stop looking at me like that. It's making me uncomfortable." And then she walks away and he goes, "Sorry, m'lady." And he does this smirk that is just the grossest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, girl said no. Back off. She's being very explicit. Oh my God! What a little creep. Oh my God.
Where he's like, getting a kick out of this. And he's like, "I'm riling her up." And it's like, no, you're like massive red flags of being like an abusive person. This is not how. And I think that's what makes me upset about this movie, is that this was in the early 2000s. This was marketed to a bunch of little boys. And they were like, "That's love." I mean, maybe, I hope not. Maybe they understood the underlying message that like, oh, right, that's Darth Vader. That's a bad guy. We're not supposed to be like him.
Give it 3 years. And one movie.
God, it made me mad. So Padme, why does she not call anyone? Anyway, so there's a scene where they're kind of like all saying goodbye to each other. Mm-hmm. Anakin, Obi-Wan is, you know, reminding Anakin to basically behave, you know. Padme is telling her handmaiden assistant, I guess.
Handmaiden.
Like, "Oh, don't worry about me. I have my Jedi protector to save me." And so they walk off, and then the captain and Obi-Wan look at each other and they're like, "Why am I worried about what he's going to do?" And then the captain is like, "Him, I'm more worried about what she's going to do." And it's like the concerned fathers watching these children go off on their own.
What has Padme ever done to upset Captain Typho? Like, I don't understand. Like, why did he have to make that comment? You know, that seems kind of rude.
He knows that she's such an independently like minded person that we see at the end of this movie. I think he knows that at one point or another, she's going to disobey orders and is going to like come back to Coruscant, or like veer off course, or like do something that like she views as for the greater good of her people, but puts her in danger. So I feel like he knows that is a trait, a really strong trait of her.
Yeah, I guess it's that moment when she's like, "Well, Obi-Wan told you to protect me and I'm going with you. So you have to just protect me there also." And then he's just like, "Yeah." And then they're off, you know, like, oh, God. Troublemakers, the two of them.
Anakin and Padme kind of exchange a thought that like they're both a little nervous. They're like, "Oh, we're off on our own." And then there's a wide shot. And R2 is behind them and R2 is chaperoning them. And they say, don't worry, we have R2 with us.
Here's the thing. R2 will get into just as much nonsense as any nonsensical person out there.
Absolutely.
He's a troublemaker.
Yeah. He gets a pass because he speaks in beeps and boops and like he looks innocent.
He's probably like the worst droid they could. They needed 3PO as the chaperone, but he doesn't show up till later, you know? Like R2 is would absolutely be an instigator.
R2, we only talked in beeps and boops, but man, that man curses. I love him. He curses all the time.
I love him.
We just can't understand it in basic in English.
So Obi-Wan visits, it's this very like random scene and we don't really get any explanation about like who this person is that he's visiting or why or what's going on.
He's
I will
Dex.
Say, I love it though. I love that. So he shows up to this like diner, like burger joint. It's giving the diner in Back to the Future when he goes to the future, but it's like 2012 or something. And Dex is this like big creature with like four arms and he's the chef or the cook, I guess is probably the more appropriate because chef makes it sound like a really fancy joint. And he's a cook and he walks out. He has this really great voice and I looked up the voice actor because it sounds so, it just sounds so familiar. And he wasn't really in a lot of other notable stuff, or at least nothing that I recognized. So that's kind of a shame that like this is a very like gregarious voice actor and I don't really recognize him from anything else. And I believe he might have passed away, I think. So that's really a shame. But I'm glad we got to enjoy him in this scene. He brings so much life to this character that's only here for like 5 minutes. But
I love this guy. I know nothing about him, but I love him.
Anyway, Obi-Wan brings him the dart to look at, and he's like, our records aren't bringing anything up. Do you know anything about it? And he says, yes, this marking over here, it's from the planet Kamino. And he's like, it's about 16 parsecs outside of the blah, blah, blah. I'm bringing this up because apparently parsecs was once used as a measurement for time in the original trilogy and I didn't notice it, and now they're using it for distance, it appears.
It's a little nebulous.
Whatever.
They continue to retcon it like in future stuff. It's funny.
Yeah. I like the idea that parsec is just like a whatever unit. You just use it to measure anything. Like, how much blue milk do you want? About 1.5 parsecs, please. Like
just as like a general counter.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so as great as this scene is, and as like friendly and fun as Dex is, there's like no explanation for like who this character is, what his background is, what his connection with Obi-Wan is. How does he know about this like poison dart from this really specific planet that the Jedi archives aren't bringing up? There's, at least I don't remember there being an explanation shown.
Yeah, Dex is one of those characters, I think, speaking of a prequel resurgence. I won't spoil like where, because I don't know what your Star Wars journey is going to look like, how deep you're going into it. But he does start to show up in some other places and it kind of illustrates a bit more of who he is, some of the connections he has and some of the knowledge that he has, because he is a very old character as well. He's been around for hundreds of years, I will say that.
So interesting.
Yeah, he's got a very complex history. Yeah.
Yeah, the more people write about him, the more interesting he gets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the guy you want in your corner, for sure.
And it's a shame because he doesn't show up in this movie again. I love that perhaps like the, you know, maybe what you're alluding to, like the Disney shows or something, bring him in because it is such an interesting character. And they end this conversation. He says like, well, when you go to this planet, just make sure like they'll like you as long as you have good manners and a deep wallet. And then he does this like evil laugh that I was like, wait a minute, are you a good guy or a bad guy? I thought you were a friend. But Obi-Wan he also like chuckles. So he's not perturbed by it. So I guess this is just what Dex is like. But I was kind of like, wait a minute, what? I thought you were a cool guy, but then all of a sudden this conversation took like a left turn.
It's the I know more than you vibe.
Yeah. And it's like, but is he purposefully leading Obi-Wan into a trap of some kind? Like, I didn't know what to make of that. So Obi-Wan goes back to the library to investigate. Supposedly, the Jedi Archives, it is identical to the library at Trinity College in Dublin. It just says Lucasfilm denied that this was deliberate and says it was purely coincidental. That is the biggest piece of I've ever heard, because these are literally identical libraries, except for the fact that the Jedi one has like glowing blue books on the shelves. And like, that's the only difference.
Gathered some inspiration from some real life locations. Vaguely.
It's like,
no,
it's like a 1-to-1 ratio. It's so funny to me that they're like, oh, it's just a coincidence. Like,
the Jedi Archives are one of my favorite places in Star Wars, I will say. So I'm happy you finally have gotten to get there in this movie. And I know Sarah particularly loves the librarian, Jocasta Nu, which I'm sure you're about to get to, but it's a special place. It's a special place.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm a simple woman. I like books. I saw a pretty library.
Look at the library.
Also, I have been to the Trinity College library and it's magnificent. It's beautiful. So I saw it come on screen and I was like, that's a dope library. It's pretty cool. I love that there are Jedi librarians. I'm like, that, I found my job in this universe. Because when people are like, oh, well, what would, like, in Lord of the Rings, and like, what would you be in Middle Earth? Like, what species? Or like, what would your role be in, you know, in Avatar? Like, what nation would you be? I, in Star Wars, would be a librarian. I would love that.
I'm right there with you.
Don't put me on spaceships. Don't put me in battle. I don't need to do any of that. Just a library.
There is a character in one of the High Republic books who is a historian and a folklorist. And I was like, that's my guy. Jedi historian and folklorist. And I was like, that's the love of my life right there. Jocasta Nu and Comac Vitus, my besties. Like, I'm like, I love the nerds.
Yes. And so she walks up to Obi-Wan and is like, do you need any help? And he's like, yes. But, and so they go and sit down at, so it, I can't remember what they sit down, but in my mind, it's a computer, but I can't remember if it's like, there's no way it's like an actual
terminal,
computer,
you know,
whatever. So they sit down at the, you know, computer lab that a public library would have. And he's like, I'm looking for this planet. I looked in the solar system map. It's supposed to be roughly in this area, but I don't see anything. And she goes, well, if it's not in our system, it doesn't exist, basically. Oh, well, too bad. And it's like, huh, not sure that's how it works, but okay.
No, that's how it works. That's how it works. I also have a shirt that says Jedi Temple Archives. You know, if it doesn't appear in the database, it does not exist. That I got at Star Wars Celebration, like for the 20th anniversary. It's like my favorite. Like the joke is so good.
I do love that line though, because it, again, like speaking to when I said this is really a noir film in some ways, it really adds to that intrigue. And I think why Obi-Wan's quest is so interesting in this movie, because it's like, oh, like what is
like
going
mystery.
On? It's kind of like this, like, you know, something's rotten in the state of Denmark moment of like something's up in the Republic. Like, you know, Yoda's talking about dark side forces growing in and like clouding their judgment. But then on top of that, you have like actual knowledge within the Jedi Archives that's like gone. And it's like this big, you know, mystery box and in this just area that they don't know anything about. Like, what could that mean? It's clearly not good.
It was such confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, well, I guess that's a little tongue in cheek joke, but like she firmly believes that statement. She's like, but if it's not in books, what? Where else would it be?
It like speaks to where the Jedi are at, though. She's so confident in the knowledge of that space that there is no other answer.
Yeah. Now we see, let's see. Oh my God. What are their names? Padme and Anakin are on the ship leaving, going back to Naboo. And they're traveling as refugees, by the way. They're trying to, you know, like remain, you know, undercover, so to speak, and, you know, be as inconspicuous as possible. So they're on this like public ship that has like some kind of a restaurant or a bar or a food court or whatever on board. And R2 goes to pick up the food. And then the droid says, sorry, no droids allowed to him. And if you've watched the cap, if you have the captions on, by the way, it says that R2 blows raspberries is the description of like this noise that he makes. And like, I'll insert it here. And I love that because it's like definitely like captures that energy and that mood that he has whenever he makes that noise of being like, well, screw you. So he picks up their food. He has once again been reduced to like a bar cart or a servant. And brings it over to Anakin and Padme. And they're having this conversation about like what it means to be a Jedi and whether or not Anakin is allowed to fall in love. And he's like, well, Jedi, they're not supposed to love people. We're not supposed to have attachments. But unending compassion is a is like the whole point of being a Jedi. And to me, compassion has to leave room for love. And she's like, yeah, I guess so. And then he says something about like, man, you haven't changed a bit. You look exactly as I remember you in my dreams. And then like she kind of like smiles and nods and laughs a bit and doesn't say anything else.
Anakin really had us in the first half there, because I do totally agree about like, and this is something we've talked a lot about in regards to the High Republic, is just compassion and like that being actually the greatest strength of a Jedi, like not their sword, not their force powers, like, you know, it's their compassion for all life, and that, you know, that includes love. So he's got a point there, and I think that the Jedi really not giving him the space to talk through that and like have that exercise of like thinking about compassion in the space of a Jedi's life, and kind of shutting that down is like largely the problem with the Jedi, is like, no, there's not compassion. There's nothing there. There's no emotion. There is peace. That's like their whole mantra, right? So Anakin in some respects does think very differently and like what a Jedi truly should feel like in some ways, but he just does it in an unhealthy way because he's not given that space.
Yeah. And like, that's a shame because, you know, he's supposed to be this chosen one. He's supposed to bring balance to the Force. And so I feel like they should have been more open to being like, well, hang on, maybe let's hear what this chosen one has to say. Maybe he has a different way of thinking that's going to open things up for us and is going to bring this balance in, you know, into nature for us. And totally shutting that down, I think, is denying him the ability to kind of like do what he was born to do, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that like, if they had given him that space, maybe, you know, this, I'm assuming, I'm just going to make a wild guess here, that he does not bring balance to the Force, that he like does not fulfill his obligations as the chosen one, like the Jedi Council were expecting him to do. And perhaps if they had been more open to how he thought of things, that could have happened. So I guess, you know, we won't know. Supposedly, Hayden Christensen really enjoyed filming this scene because it was all a real set and it was not green screen. And this kind of makes me really sad to hear this, because it's like, that's what the whole movie should have been. It should have all been real sets or, you know, as much as possible. And like, that's what the original movies were real sets. And like, that's such a shame that like, he was like, yeah, I was actually on a set and that's why I liked it the most. And it's like, that should be like a bare minimum requirement for movies.
If I can play a tiny bit of devil's advocate here, as sure. An actor, I'm in like an actor's mindset. I fully agree with you 200%. I also don't think movies would be where they are today digitally without the contributions of these movies. And I think George Lucas felt, I mean, this is why he went back and did the special editions of the original movies, because he felt like technology wasn't where I wanted it to be when I released these movies, and now I can do more. And so I think like him pushing so far from what we know and expect, and also maybe what actors know and expect, allowed future productions to pull back a bit. And I have to say, like, a lot of the digital visuals in this movie really do hold up in a really interesting way. Some of them don't, for sure.
They're not bad.
Like, some of them are so gorgeous still. Like, all of Coruscant is stunning.
Yeah, it looks better than some of the stuff we see in Marvel today. You know, like, when you look at big places like Thor's homeworld, Asgard, stuff like that. Like, Coruscant looks great. I don't know. Like, yeah. Pioneered it pretty well. I agree with you, Sarah. Like,
yeah,
this really shepherding in like a new digital age. But yeah, and I think it's interesting totally, too, yeah, how Star Wars has gone back to some of that old practical effects and sets as well, and kind of like trying to blend those two sides of the equation in today's world. I always find that balance kind of interesting, you know, green screen versus on location versus, you know, so on and so
versus
forth.
Versus the volume.
Yeah.
Versus the volume, yeah. Yeah. It's a new factor, so.
Not to bring up Lord of the Rings, what? But it, I think, especially for the prequels, it's somewhat of a, I think it's a natural comparison because they were being filmed and coming out around the same time. Mm-hmm. Actually, this was the first time that a Star Wars movie, like the year it came out, it was not like the top billing movie of that year because Lord of the Rings came out. And I think also Spider-Man 2 beat it. But this was like all happening around the same time. And I think what made Lord of the Rings so good is that so much of it was practical, mm-hmm, real effects, shot on location versus like Peter Jackson was like, do we have to green screen the Balrog and, you know, like all this other, like if he could do it for real, that was what they wanted to do. And so I think there's a big, like huge difference between how we view those films now, like 20 years on. And I think there's, I definitely just think there's something to be said for like the acting component that I think like being in a real world setting versus on a green screen, I think surely has to like change that experience so much.
Totally.
So, yeah. So that'll bring us to the end of our discussion of Attack of the Clones. I do have one more very silly piece of trivia to share, which is that NSYNC was supposed to be in the nightclub scene at the beginning, but it was cut out of the final cut. And that is so that like just speaking of like all these intersections of like early 2000s, like pop culture of like everything that was going on, NSYNC was, they were supposed to be Jedi in the nightclub at the beginning of the movie. That is so funny to me. I wish they had. Is there an extended scene where we do see them? Because that would be great.
I don't think so. But it's funny because they do like bring in notable people to play stormtroopers and stuff. Like I think at one point in the sequel trilogy, they brought like one of the princes of England, and put him in a stormtrooper costume. I don't know if that like little scene ended up making the cut, but like it's so funny because there are such random people. They're like, let's throw him in an outfit.
I guess that's a very easy movie for someone famous to call up and be like, hey, can I be in Star Wars? And it's like, sure, come on in. We'll get you fitted for a special costume. And you show up and it's a stormtrooper costume. And it's like,
yeah. Right, and you have your like one line of like, nice weather today. In your stormtrooper helmet or whatever.
I do love about the nightclub scene too. They put Ahmed Best and Anthony Daniels, who, you know, both are characters, like Anthony playing C-3PO and Ahmed playing Jar Jar. Yeah. So they got to do some face characters in that scene.
Really
in the
doing some, yeah, like double casting, yeah, here, being like, who's available?
We need so on the flip side,
some background extras, yeah, here.
I don't really love like the cameos behind the mask, but also people who are usually behind the mask or behind the makeup or, you know, behind the prosthetics who get to get out of those for one time or another.
Yeah, Ahmed Best actually getting to like be a real person, yeah, for once.
Yeah, and I think there's some interesting connections with that character in the Outlander Club and some other, I don't know. There's some connections there that will be important later in Star Wars' some of the TV stuff. So it's really interesting. That scene's really fun though. NSYNC, I didn't actually know that about NSYNC. So that's something I learned today.
I think it would be like equivalent to if they were shooting a Star Wars movie now, it would be equivalent to having like Taylor Swift cameo or like some K-pop band. I'm not cool to know what like
BTS in a Star Wars,
who
Sarah, do you want
yeah,
it?
Like BTS. Yeah.
Sarah's
like,
a huge
that's
BTS
so money
fan.
To me.
I think it's time to put some K-pop in the Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's my hot take of the day.
I think it would fit in pretty well. I think that could definitely work. Well, Brad and Sarah, thank you both so much for joining me, for kicking this movie off with such enthusiasm and excitement, despite my feelings about it. Where can people find you on the internet?
Sarah and I are both pointing at each other. You want me to go first? You go first.
No,
I go
you
first. Who
talks
first?
The outro. You
Spider-Man
do the outro.
Meme.
You can
the outro guy.
Yeah, I mean, you can find me at Brad Whipple on Twitter. Sarah's on Twitter at SCH221. our podcast Friends of the Force at Friends of Force, because we couldn't fit the in the app because of the character limit. And yeah, we try to post every week. We're more like bi-weekly now because we got pretty busy lives. But we're mostly talking about Star Wars, The High Republic. And we'll be talking about Star Wars, The Acolyte very soon.
Before you can totally not creepily tell the girl you have a crush on that you dream about her, you gotta skywalk before you run. Skywalk Before You Run is hosted and edited by me, Mary Clay Watt. The cover art and music is by Jason Hilton. Follow the podcast on Instagram and Threads at Skywalk Before You Run. Follow me on TikTok and Twitch at MC Watts Up and on Instagram at MC Turned Down for Watt. Go to patreon.com/TolkienAboutPod to become a supporter of this podcast, join the Deus Ex Media Discord server, and gain access to bonus material. This podcast is a proud member of the Deus Ex Media Network.